Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking about 3D printers and some of the exciting work that Benetech and the Diagram Center have been doing to think about how we can use 3D printers.
We'll be speaking with Anne Bowie and Lisa Waters-Vern of Benetech about their work to develop the infrastructure to support the use of this technology and how it might work in practice. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, be glad for how accessible reading materials have become, yet also be glad that people are still working towards even better access in the future. Well, you know, the world has certainly changed since 10, 20, 30 years ago when you showed up in a classroom and you got a book on paper, and if you couldn't read it or deal with the figures, that was your problem. And we, the entire world, is very grateful that there are people and organizations like Benetech attacking these problems and creating better access for more and more people who need it.
Yeah, and I think that you know, this is only the start, right? So people who believe in educating students want to make sure we give them the most opportunities as possible. And to have alternative opportunities like sonification or 2D tactiles or even 3D objects will help a variety of different type of learners. And having those options, like I said, is just the beginning. Who knows what we're going to be like next year and in 5 years and 10 years from now.
And in the rest of the show, we'll be hearing about some of those options and how 3D printers can be used to make some of this material more accessible for a variety of individuals.
Let's start by meeting Anne and Lisa and learning about Benetech and what they do in general before we get to the next segment where we'll be focusing on their 3D printer project.
My name is Anne Bowie. I'm the Vice President of Benetech Labs.
And I'm Lisa Waters-Vern. I am the Program Manager for Education, Research, and Partnerships at Benetech for our Global Literacy and our Benetech Labs projects.
And for people who aren't familiar with the name Benetech, can you tell us what Benetech does and what it encompasses?
Sure. This is Anne. I can start in that question. So Benetech is a nonprofit that builds technology for the social sector. We're based here in Palo Alto, California, and we really are trying to apply what we are able to learn and know and experience here in Silicon Valley around tech development to building products to serve humanity in places where the market doesn't think it's worth building because it doesn't have as much monetary return as the market would like. So our main programs are actually in human rights, where we work in a lot in crypto security to help with documenting human rights abuses. And our largest program is what we call global literacy, where we work primarily in the intersection of education and accessibility. And many of your listeners may know us for running Bookshare, which is the world's largest online digital library of books for people with print disabilities. And then the third major program here at Benetech is what I run, which is called Benetech Labs, where we incubate new ideas and experiment with new prototypes and projects, technologies, in order to see what might be the next big thing that will help us have great impact in the social sectors that we all care about. Within Benetech Labs, we do a fair amount of research and development for technology around creating better experiences and more content access for people with print disabilities as well.
And what is the relationship of the Diagram Center to Benetech Labs or Benetech itself?
So the Diagram Center is a research and development center that is funded by the Department of Education, and it really grew out of the work that we have done in Bookshare. We're able to deploy a lot of tools and technology to get text more accessible, but the images, as you may know, are a much knottier problem. And so the Department of Ed funded Benetech to start the Diagram Center with some key partners, the National Center for Accessible Media at WGPH, and the U.S. Fund for DAISY, so the folks behind the DAISY standard and the U.S. Contingent of the DAISY Consortium. And together, we put together an R&D center that is managed by Benetech, who also builds the community around the Diagram Center. So let me take a step back and explain what that means. Much of the work that we do with the Diagram Center is not just Benetech going off and, you know, doing code, but rather building and engaging a really powerful community of other actors in the field. So other technologists, educators, end users who have vested interests in the area of image accessibility, who have a lot of expertise, and who have been willing to roll up their sleeves and try different things in the name of making it easier, faster, and cheaper to access and use accessible digital images. As an RD center, Diagram falls squarely within the lab's area of work, but it also falls squarely with our global literacy work as well. So it's an initiative that spans our programs.
Diagram is actually an acronym in addition to being descriptive of dealing with the non-text items on the page, correct?
It is an acronym. It stands for Digital Image and Graphic Resource for Accessible Materials. I can't take credit for that acronym, but it's a pretty good one.
You're based in California, and your partners seem to be mostly United States agencies and non-governmental organizations, in addition to the International DAISY Consortium. But I gather that many of your products and technologies are available to people worldwide. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Most of what we do, the vast majority of what we do on the technology side, is open source, which means it's available to anyone. And our services like Bookshare do have a global reach. So Bookshare is available in, I wouldn't say, 40 different countries. And our software in our human rights program, MARTIS, is used in many, many countries as well. So we do have a global reach, and we're trying to increase that.
And if anybody is interested in learning more about Benetech and a service that they provide that many of you probably make use of, Bookshare, we've done several other episodes of Eyes on Success focusing on that, including two just this past spring, in which we spoke with Jim Fruchterman, who founded and has been a crucial part of the leadership of Benetech for years. And so you can either enter Benetech into the search field on our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net, or you can look at the show notes for this episode, which you can find in the same place.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
As promised, this week's focus topic is Benetech's 3D printer project.
So today we mostly want to focus on your work to evaluate how 3D printers can be used to help the print disabled in a variety of areas. 3D printers have become pretty ubiquitous these days and pretty inexpensive, but I was wondering if you just give people who aren't familiar with it a quick overview of what they can really do these days.
So 3D printers themselves are actually a form of rapid prototyping where layers upon layers of plastic or other materials are built to create an object in a 3D form that can be then taken and used in a variety of different ways. Our interest in 3D printing around education came from the idea that many people are tactile learners. And so, you know, whether they are tactile learners because they can't see the object or might be difficult to interpret what a flat object on a page might be, we've done a lot of thinking and a lot of talking and starting to do some work on trying to figure out how do these tactiles actually enhance, or do these tactiles actually enhance access to education. So I said a lot of that kind of backwards and forwards, but basically our interest is in looking at 3D tactiles to support access to education. And another way to build upon the work that's done in the Diagram Center in representing images in a different format.
3D prototypes are not only important for the visually impaired, but also even sighted people, you know, different people learn differently. So sometimes a tactile representation is better than reading about something or looking at an image on a piece of paper or a screen.
Right. And a prime example of this, one object that we found that actually exemplifies that statement is, if you think about a double helix, and when we're talking about DNA, looking at it in a textbook or on a screen, you don't get the sense of how it actually twists and turns and how it truly makes the shape that, you know, it's intending to, until you actually are able to hold it. And we know that DNA is not something that many people are able to hold in their hands. It's very small, which is why one of the reasons why we would print something in 3D. I'm not responsible for this phrase, but we tend to think about, you know, the things we would print would be things that are too big, like a mountain range, too small, like DNA, too fragile, or even too dangerous, as an opportunity to experience an object that may only have been available through a picture or graph.
Now, you started this work some time ago to evaluate how these 3D printers can be used in educational and other arenas. Can you describe how that work progressed and what your current status is?
Sure. So last year, we were awarded a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services to look into the implications of libraries, museums, and schools all playing together in the 3D printing realm. As part of this project, we had a number of deliverables that some have been complete and some are nearing completion that help us try to figure out, is there an interaction between these three groups? The first deliverable that we had, and one of the things we were most excited about doing, was building on our ability to form communities, to form a community around 3D printing for education. So for the first time, probably ever, we pulled together museums, libraries, teachers, end users, technologists, publishers, and others to talk about 3D printing and how could we make 3D printed objects accessible to people who might benefit from the use of 3D printed tactiles. So we conducted this forum in June, had a great meeting, 3 days in San Jose, California at the Tech Museum for Innovation, and we had about 50 people join us for this forum. And out of that forum came a number of different things. We talked a lot about maker spaces, but we also talked about 3D printed tactiles for education. And so, you know, one of the themes that could come around both of those is the opportunity for students in maker spaces to be creating objects for other students in other parts of the school who could benefit from use of them, when especially talking about things in STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and math.
So she mentioned makerspaces, and we didn't know what that was, so we Googled it and found this definition at www.makerspace.com. To describe them simply, makerspaces are community centers with tools. Makerspaces combine manufacturing equipment, community, and education for the purposes of enabling community members to design, prototype, and create manufactured works that wouldn't be possible to create with the resources available to individuals working alone. These spaces can take the form of loosely organized individuals sharing space and tools, for-profit companies, nonprofit corporations, organizations affiliated with or hosted within schools, universities, or libraries, and more. Makerspaces represent the democratization of design, engineering, fabrication, and education.
So what were some of the outputs of this conference that you had?
We had a variety of different things that we talked about, but one of the overwhelming themes was the need for accessibility in both having objects for the students to use or people to use, and also in makerspaces. And oftentimes makerspaces themselves are not very accessible. So I think that, you know, one of the biggest things and a really strong win for this was the people that attended this conference left thinking about accessibility in ways that they had not necessarily thought about it before. And how could they make either their spaces more accessible or increase accessibility for people who would benefit from the objects that were being created.
I guess that was important because many of your participants were not necessarily focusing on accessibility. They were just focusing on using 3D printing in STEM education for the general population.
I think the majority of the people that were thinking about it were coming more from the maker space. So they were focused more on the making. But we also had participants who joined us who were responsible for creating accessible content for their students. And actually, intertwining both groups was pretty amazing because we had people who then started thinking about other ways they could create objects. So the people that are working at disability service offices or supporting other people with special needs were now able to think broader in how they were actually providing some accessible content to their students. But the people who were a part of the making process or the maker spaces process started thinking about other implications for using the maker space. So as I mentioned before, most makerspaces aren't necessarily accessible. However, one of the themes that came throughout was, what if some of the people that were participating in the making could be making for students in the school?
Well, and I think that's really important. Once you get the people with the need involved in actually creating the outputs, and if the tools are accessible to them, then you'll really get some output that is really functional for the needs that they have.
This is Anne again. I think you're articulating something really important. I mean, one of the inspirations for this conference was a quote that we heard someone use who has a makerspace. And he said, you know what? I'm really tired of printing Yoda heads, which is, you know, no criticism of Yoda. But we understood that he meant that many of these spaces are, you know, perhaps for hobbyists, and there's great value in the creative process by itself, but there were also many people searching for something meaningful to print. And we are in the middle of a movement now, we're not alone, where there are organizations that are harnessing the power of 3D printing to create really meaningful objects that change lives. So Enables is an example of that kind of project where they have created a community of 3D printers as in people, who design and build prosthetics for people who could not otherwise afford them, or for children for whom prosthetics are not normally made because they can be so expensive. So we see ourselves also in that space where we feel that there's a critical mass of making capacity that means that the time is great for us to provide really meaningful things for people to print.
And this is Lisa, just to add to that too, as I mentioned, people in the makerspaces could potentially make things for other students on campus. However, one thing to think about, and one of the things that we've been talking about here as well, is participatory accessibility. And so having people who could potentially benefit from having 3D printed learning tools be part of the process in designing and creating these tools for their classroom. In the forum itself, we had a design day or a hack day where we paired designers with persons, both sighted and non-sighted, who would potentially benefit from having 3D printed tactiles. And what the groups did was actually mold things out of Play-Doh into a form that made sense. And the designer then took that and was able to create a 3D printable file to be printed in accordance with a biology textbook that we identified.
In terms of the visually impaired and print disabled communities, what specific types of applications are you envisioning or have people created?
The work we've done so far and the work that we'd like to continue to do is actually to take a book that students are using in the classroom and have 3D printed files tagged or be able to be accessed through the digital text so that someone could actually download and print an object. So how would they actually use that object and for whom? Different people learn in different ways. And so having one particular object may not be the right answer. For example, we found online a model of a cell that we thought was a good candidate to be downloaded for someone to use to understand the components of it. As we were working on it and as we were interacting with it, we realized that it was actually too busy for some of our blind users, and they worked to take out some of the pieces that would have just been that extra, that for a visual learner may have made sense, but for someone with a visual impairment needed a little bit more definition in certain places and less definition in others. So the objects themselves could be a way to get a feel for, literally a feel for, what is actually being communicated through the text. So you think about someone who may never have experienced certain shapes, to be able to print a shape that they would be able to manipulate and hold might help them better understand. And a really good example of this was a woman who just graduated, I should say, from Virginia Tech, who was taking advanced physics courses. And as they determined some of the abstract concepts in space that they were able to identify and design and create into a 3D printed model, when you talk to her, she will actually say the minute she held a saddle or a cone or something that would have been abstract in physics terms to begin with, she actually got the concept. And one of the neat things about that story is that her sighted peers in her class, when they were able to manipulate the same objects, thought the same thing, that now they were able to take something that was very abstract and make it more concrete for their learning.
And if anybody is interested, in our show notes, we'll have a link to the YouTube video where you can watch what happened.
So this mechanism that you're talking about tagging either figures or other items in books with files that can then be 3D printed, are you envisioning making this an extension to the EPUB standard?
Great question. So one of the things that we do at the Diagram Center is actually work on standards. And one of the things that we have developed under Diagram is something called Diagrammer, which is a framework for marking up images to provide additional metadata about those images so that you can, you know, either provide multiple different types of descriptions, some metadata about, you know, the applicability of that image for a certain grade level, and in addition, provide a link to a downloadable file that either could provide, say, an embossed version or some other tactile version. And in this case, it would be a 3D printable version. So yes, we're also looking under the hood and finding ways to mark up the content so that any pub file could contain or reference, or an HTML file for that matter, could contain or reference a link to a downloadable tactile.
So then presumably if a student was reading a book and wanted access to one of these 3D objects or even to get something embossed, they would go either to a school that had one of these printers in a centralized location or a library, and bingo, they could have this in their hands. Is that the idea?
Right. And I think, you know, even beyond that, we can imagine a couple scenarios. You're reading the book, you come into an image, you listen to it, you think, I'd like to touch this. You see that there's a link there, you click it, and you automatically order that image and it comes to you. You can order it from your printer down the hallway. You could order it from your school. You could order it from your local library and it comes to you. And, you know, and hopefully there will also be a mechanism for you to recycle or reuse that object as well. So we're trying to think along the entire chain of use and put together the infrastructure and, you know, even more importantly, the collaborations that are required to make something like that possible.
So just to give people an idea, and I understand this will depend on the size and complexity of the object, but roughly how long would you expect it to take to print a useful 3D image of one of these objects?
You know, I think a lot of it depends on the equipment that you're using, the size of the file, the size of the actual finished product. And things range between, you know, a few minutes to a few hours. So if something's very, very complex and very large, it would take a few hours to print. On the machines that we currently have, knowing that there are machines out there that print a lot faster, you know, the higher end machines obviously have different types of output. But, you know, if we're thinking about our schools or our libraries, prints could take anywhere from, as I said, a few minutes to a few hours, depending on all of the things that are, you know, involved in this particular print.
And we're really conscious that 3D printing as a technology is still in many ways in its infancy, or maybe its toddler years. Come a long, long way, but it's not super consumer ready. It's not necessarily for the faint of heart. And, you know, you don't just push a button and get an object. Often, you know, errors will happen. You'll have to fix it. Once you do get your object, then you have to finish your object, which means getting it off the plate that you printed it on, taking off any support materials that were added to help it print, etc. So it can be a complex process. But we are banking on, as much of the industry is, banking on that improving significantly in a pretty short time. And so we're thinking that the process will improve.
And as you said, you're getting a head start on putting together the processes and collaborations and the infrastructure for doing this.
That's right.
That's a big deal.
It's definitely a long game. And, you know, we like to prototype quickly, which is one of the reasons why we're trying to put together some objects and affiliated with a book so that we can, you know, get teachers and students using them to see how effective it is. But at the same time, we know that building standards and infrastructure, et cetera, it takes time. So we do want to start while the industry is young.
So what are your next steps in this process?
Right now, we're finishing up some of the follow-up activities from the forum. And as I mentioned before, the forum itself was the major deliverable that we focus on first. But out of that, we're creating a collection of objects that are tied to this biology book. In addition, we're also working on a quick start guide so that for people who are interested in learning about 3D printed tactiles for education, they could use this quick start guide to determine if this is something that's appropriate to be printed, and if so, for whom, and use that as, you know, just kind of a starting point, or even where do I get something that I want printed, right? So if they don't have a printer, who can they connect with to actually find printed materials? Next, we are looking for opportunities to expand this information and to really get detail as to what works and for whom, and would teachers even be interested in having this option to download things to use in their classroom. So I think we're really at the, you know, although we've done some really great work this first year, I think we're really excited for what the years and the years to come have.
Now for this week's final item, how you can get more information about Benetech's 3D printing project, Benetech in general, and all of their other projects and programs.
So if people want to find out more about what Benetech does and about how these projects are progressing, where would they go?
There's two places they could go. On the Diagram Center, there is a page that specifically talks about 3D printing and some of our work around 3D printing. But also on the Benetech website, so that's www.benetech.org, there's information about our 3D printing project and our other labs projects.
And what's the URL for the Diagram Center site?
Diagramcenter.org.
And I noticed that you are keeping up a blog if people want to follow this on a more regular basis.
Yes, we have a blog on both Diagram and on Benetech, and there will be more 3D-specific blogs coming out later this year.
And do you have the address for the blog?
It's a relatively long URL. So actually, if you just go to the Diagram Center site, diagramcenter.org site, and in the top menu, there will be a link for the blog. And then same with the Benetech site. There's a pretty prominent link at the top in the top menu.
So if people wanted to contact either of you or somebody else at Benetech to ask questions, who would they send a note to?
So they would send a note to 3d@benetech.org, and that note would actually come to me. And you know, we'd be more than happy to either answer the questions or connect them with other people in the community who might have answers to the questions that they're interested in.
And we shouldn't forget to direct people to bookshare.org if they're interested in reading some of the ebooks that you guys provide.
And of course, they're on social media as well. You can find them on Facebook as Benetech and on Twitter as @Benetech.
And as usual, there's no need to have been writing all of that information down. We'll have all of that contact information along with all the links you heard in our show notes associated with this show. And in addition, we'll have links to an episode of Eyes on Success in which we talked with a graduate student in chemistry who made use of his own personal 3D printer. So just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net for those show notes.
That's it for show number 1537. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the NFB Performing Arts Division. The Performing Arts Division of the National Federation of the Blind offers many resources and opportunities for people interested in music, dance, and other aspects of performing. We'll speak with Jordy Stringer and Julie McGinnity about how members can connect and share experiences to improve skills, find employment, or just have fun. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, @EyesOnSuccess, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.